This article is entitled A Preacher's Skeptical Friend, The Value of Doubt in the Christian Life. It's written for us by Frank Honeycutt. 40 years ago, just out of college at a summer camp in upstate South Carolina, I met an atheist whose friendship would shape my theological formation and pastoral ministry more than any seminary professor I ever had, and that's saying a lot. My friend and I worked with profoundly mentally challenged children and adults and exchanged long letters for the next 4 decades. The letters often described why I believe in a loving God and why he could not, and I used the word atheist to describe my friend, but it's not a title Andy ever embraced. I refuse to define myself in terms of God, he once wrote. Andy consistently raised excellent questions in our exchanges and was honest and loving enough to probe my sometimes flimsy arguments. Is your God found only in sunsets and curly-headed babies? He once inquired at 3 a.m. as they rocked a disturbed and wailing child in a camp cabin. Or also revealed in hurricanes? It wasn't difficult to detect his meaning. A longtime admirer of philosopher Albert Schweitzer, Andy was the most compassionate and gentle person I've ever known, and maybe the funniest. I once skipped morning prayers to write him from the seminary pecan grove before my next class of Lutheran confessions. The first sentence of his return letter was, "Quit skipping chapel, you son of a bee." This past September, Andy died in his sleep beside his faithful dog Gandhi at his off-the-grid homestead in northwestern Maine, only 3 weeks after being diagnosed with leukemia. He was perhaps sicker than he knew or was willing to say. And the week he fell violently ill, Andy was doing 100 pull-ups per day, a decades-long discipline, from a beam in his tightly insulated 12-by-12-foot cabin with a small loft. The man was in fantastic physical shape. He backpacked the entire Appalachian Trail 5 separate times. Add in single through hikes of the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, my diminutive 5'5" friend logged well more than 15,000 miles of unassisted backcountry trail hiking in his lifetime, not to mention a solo cycling trip from North Carolina to Guatemala. Andy built the small Maine cabin himself near a reliable spring, and often snowshoed during the winter, well before dawn, to his truck parked at the closest cleared road over a mile away, to drive to his job as a nurse at a residential facility near the Kennebec River. He sent me a text only 3 days before his death. "You know I'm baptized," Andy wrote that day. "My parents took care during that first year of my childhood in that Methodist church, but if I wake up in your hoped-for heavenly place, I'll have to say I didn't ask to come here." 7 candidates for the Doctor of Ministry and Preaching degree were sitting around the circle in Chicago one morning in June of 1996. I was describing an idea for my doctoral thesis. I live in a small town in Virginia, and I want to discover what 15 atheists and agnostics of my acquaintance are hearing as they listen in church this fall to a series of 4 sermons. Not trying to convert anybody, I just want to learn how Christian preaching sounds to them and what they make of it. And then I want to compare that test group to a separate group of adult seekers who've just returned to church life after a long absence, another 4 sermons next spring. The sermons wouldn't be specifically written for either group, only normal Sunday preaching based on the assigned lectionary texts. The responses from my pastoral colleagues weren't very encouraging. First, they said, "How will you find such people, especially the first test group, much less convince them to come to church?" Well, in my book that emerged from that study, Preaching to Skeptics and Seekers, was largely inspired by Andy. He lived too far away in Maine to participate and would have been embarrassed and politely amused had I asked him, but our friendship at that point, nearing 20 years, absolutely emboldened me to approach a variety of other friends I had met at parties and in the community. Both groups, the skeptics and the seekers, wrote reams of generous replies in response to the post-sermon prompts I provided in questionnaires. I sent Andy a copy of the book when it came out, and I told him that our friendship had inspired it. "Well, the Lord works in mysterious ways," he wrote back. I can hardly overstate how much I learned from that doctoral enterprise, or how much the project would shape my future pastoral interests, especially in the areas of adult spiritual formation and the historic catechumenate. Adults seeking baptism and others who have been away since childhood need and desire far more than the typical three-session inquirer's class of welcome that many congregations tend to provide. Later, when writing or evaluating sermons, I often ask myself, what would Andy think of this? I wasn't preaching to my friend, but I began to realize that on any given Sunday, there is more doubt in church pews than some church leaders are willing to admit. Andy became skeptical muse for the arc and direction of many pulpit efforts. These days, I tell pastors, befriend a few skeptics, not with a secret agenda to convert them. That's great if it happens, but primarily to discover their honest reservations about God. Skeptics can become your preaching allies. They're often much more forthcoming about their doubts than many in the church, and can help you discover what largely remains unspoken, but is absolutely present in congregational life. In his 50s, Andy bought a Greyhound bus ticket to return to his cabin in Maine after a long backpacking trip. Dog-tired, he settled into the last remaining seat in the back row. His seatmate recently was released from prison and was friendly and talkative with a glass eye. The man wouldn't let Andy sleep and kept flashing pictures of his girlfriend waiting at his destination, revealing a good bit more than Andy cared to see. The man repeatedly removed the glass eye from its socket and at one point reached over to the seat in front of him, holding the eye between index finger and thumb, startling two young women with the words, "I can see you, I can see you." Well, the bus driver pulled over, walked to the back, and threatened to throw both men off the bus. Andy was too tired to offer a defense. "I can see you." God brings surprising people into our lives, clearly seeing the ones we need most. As a retired pastor, I have time to reflect on the many people who have shaped and inspired a particular ministry lasting more than three decades. God saw in Andy an unusual and delightful man whom I needed. The Creator also saw Andy for the amazing agent of the Holy that he most certainly was. "I am thoroughly convinced," wrote Dallas Willard in The Divine Conspiracy, "that God will let everyone into heaven who, in his considered opinion, can stand it." Perhaps Andy won't be able to stand it and will pose pointed questions to the Creator. And if so, I'm confident that even in the afterlife, the God who created both weal and woe, a source of Andy's befuddlement with the divine, will allow and encourage honesty-seeking insight.